right. And our last case this morning is United States v. Mario Salas Rodriguez, case number 092112. Mr. Threlko.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Brian Threlkeld. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, and I'm arguing on behalf of Mr. Salas Rodriguez this morning. The Chief District Judge failed to address at sentencing, either directly or implicitly, one of Mr. Salas Rodriguez's principal sentencing arguments, that the Court should reduce his sentence to reflect the opportunity to serve his federal sentence concurrently with his state sentence that was lost because the government delayed prosecuting him for 2 years while he was serving that state sentence.
Now, this point was made, as I recall, in the sentencing memorandum to the district judge, was it not?
Yes, Judge.
But it was not addressed in oral argument during sentencing to her, is that correct?
Oh, it was addressed at oral argument. And
I thought the representation of the government was to the contrary.
No, and that's, well, the government is making certain interpretations of what was said. But if, in fact, if at oral argument on pages 6 through 7 of the sentencing transcript, that's appendix pages 14 through 15 of our brief, defense counsel is concluding at one of her arguments and says, because of that, I think a variance below the guideline range would be appropriate in this case, and then segues into this particular argument, says, and essentially she's saying another reason for a variance below a guideline sentence. She says, I think a variance below the guideline range would be appropriate in this case because of that previous reason. And also, again, to note that there was a delay. I won't say an intentional delay, but there was a delay in the bringing of this case. We didn't have the arraignment of this case until 3 days after Mr. Salas Rodriguez was done serving his state sentence, so it completely foreclosed any argument that I would have for concurrent or partially concurrent time.
Thank you. Yeah, I see the government said they mentioned it in passing, so the way the government characterized it.
Yeah, and I disagree with that characterization. In the sentencing memorandum, in the argument portion of the memorandum, defense counsel spent two paragraphs describing what had happened here. And she lays it out clearly at this point in the oral argument. And this is not a very complex issue that she's advancing. It's not one that requires pages and pages of exegesis. But it is not noted simply in passing. It is not just sort of superfluous padding to the narrative of the case for the district judge. The district court, because of its silence on this issue, gave this court no basis for determining whether it had considered this argument, much less a basis for this court to assess any reasoning that it might have had in this matter. The government also makes, as best I can tell, confusing a couple of things when it says that that defense counsel was conceding that the argument was foreclosed. Defense counsel, in stating that an argument was foreclosed, was stating the necessary predicate for this issue. There has to have been a delay in bringing the prosecution, and counsel says, because there was this delay, I can't make the argument that I could have made if it was promptly brought that, okay, we're at sentencing, defendant is serving a state sentence, therefore I ask the judge that the federal sentence run concurrently with the state sentence. That is what is foreclosed, and it is a necessary predicate to making this argument, which is that the sentence should be reduced in order to reflect that lost opportunity. The government's argument is also difficult to understand on another point, which is the fact of the judge's silence itself. The government seems to state that silence is evidence that this was not a substantial sentencing argument by the defendant. The government's brief states that the fact that the district judge spent most of her time focusing on defendant's argument regarding the 16-level increase indicates that defendant's observation with respect to the delay was neither a principal nor a substantial argument. Now remember, the error that we are alleging is the failure to address the defendant's sentencing argument. But this passage in the government's brief essentially says the fact of that error is evidence that it was not an error. Essentially, it's a tautological argument. And if we were to follow the government's line of reasoning, then this error would vanish, because this error only occurs when the district court has been silent on a matter at sentencing. Well, the government wants us to conclude that silence is evidence that the argument either was not substantial or was not made at all. It's the government's argument is also internally problematic in that it's saying, well, this was not a substantial argument that the defense was making, or that it was saying the argument is foreclosed. And there's no reason to think that the defendant would have been, or that defense counsel would have been taking up the sentencing judge's valuable time in saying, well, here is something that happened, but it's not a substantial argument, and anyhow, it's not foreclosed. So again, I cannot see the coherence in the government's argument on this point.
The primary argument being made for a below-guideline sentence was that the guideline was untrustworthy, essentially.
That it was based on a 20-year-old drug conviction, and so that the 16-level increase really overstated the seriousness of that component of the component of the offense level.
Right. So it was a qualitative attack on the guidelines, essentially. That was the primary argument that was being advanced.
That was what defense counsel spent the most time on. That was what the government focused on solely in its brief argument at sentencing. And that's what the judge devoted most of her time on. But it was defense counsel devoted most of her time on that because it was a fairly, relatively complicated argument. It was more complicated than this argument on the fact of the delayed prosecution and the idea that in order to reflect the lost opportunity for a concurrent sentence, that the judge should reduce the sentence further. Again, it's a fairly simple argument, and it didn't require as much time as the other offense level argument.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Paul Connell. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Western District of Wisconsin. I was responsible for the prosecution of the defendant below. I think defense counsel squarely framed the issue for the court this morning, whether the district court erred when it failed to specifically address what I would regard really as this kind of observation regarding the timing of the defendant's prosecution. I would respectfully submit there was no error by the district court here. The defendant's argument regarding the timing of his prosecution and his therefore his inability to argue for some sort of concurrent sentence was not a principal or substantial argument raised at sentencing or before sentencing. Defense counsel geared her entire argument, with the exception of one small part of her sentencing memo, toward the 3553 factors and the 16-level upward adjustment in the advisory guideline range with respect to the defendant's prior drug conviction. At sentencing, defense counsel conceded that the delay was not intentional. There's no question there was a delay here, but she admitted it was not intentional. I was there. Judge Crabb was there. Neither of us took this argument regarding concurrent time to be anything other than sort of a throw-in at the very end, trying to give what I perceived to be a little bit of the oomph to a departure based on the other issue, which was the focus of defense counsel's argument. Unless there are questions from the panel for me, I would just rest on the brief that we filed in this case.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Threlkeld, any rebuttal?
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel and Mr. Threlkeld. You were appointed to represent your client in this case by the Federal Defender's Office, right?
Yes, but we take a number of appellate cases from outside of our district.
Okay, thanks. You have the thanks to the court for your service to the client, to your client, and to the court. All right, and that concludes our call of the morning. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.